Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Child molester, a pedophile, and yet for the last, I don't know how long now, this lowlife, Michael Jackson, his name, his face, his picture, is all over the newspapers, television, radio. So all we hear about is Michael Jackson. And let's knock out the psychobabble. This guy was a pervert, and to be giving this much coverage to him day in and day out, what does it say about us as our country? No one wants to stand up and say, we don't need Michael Jackson. The media has disgraced itself. There's nothing good about this guy. What are we glorifying him for? The men and women of the armed forces, police, firefighters, they're the ones we should be glorifying, not some pervert like Michael Jackson. Would you let your child or grandchild be in the same room with Michael Jackson?
Well, not in the mortuary, that's for sure. That's Representative Peter King, Republican New York, calling Michael Jackson a pedophile and a pervert. We do not know if he will be banned in Britain, but we're holding our breath to find out who will be banned next. This is the prologue to the Savage Nation, the post-July 4th program. The phone number, as usual, 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com. I almost said michaeljackson.com. It's gotten into my head. Sorry. It is michaelsavage.com. Our president is on another trip. He has solved all of the problems in America, as you know, so therefore he is now over in Russia, and he's made an agreement to cut one-third of America's nuclear arsenal. That is so good. That is so great to see that we have a pacifist socialist in the presidency who will soon, in his own mind, be president of the world and then the universe. We have Senator Al Frankenstein going to Washington. From a comedy club to the comedy club, the idiot comedian, Senator Al Frankenstein. You can say Michael Savage said it first. Now, over July 4th weekend, I read a biography of a real American, a true American, not a minstrel, not a newsman, not a comedian, but a real, wonderful, great American. And I'm going to read you a prologue to the man's biography, and I'm going to ask you if you know who he is. Here it is. He never fit the image of the American dashing soldier, handsome and suave. Instead, he was dark, brooding, and forbidding. He rarely smiled. He spoke even less. And when he did, his few words seemed to come out in a snarl. Women seated next to him at dinner said he could sit through the entire meal and not utter a single syllable. Surly, tactless, and with a lifeless, moist cigar constantly locked between his teeth, he was the prototype of the brutal and human militarist. Most people found them frightening. For the first person who guesses who I have just described, a free copy of Psychological Nudity and or Healing Children Naturally will go out to you. I am talking about a very famous American who we should celebrate today because he was the man who, amongst others in World War II, distinguished himself. And there were many distinguished men in World War II, yet he was one of the greatest of all national heroes. Soon after World War II, scathingly destroyed by the vermin in the media, particularly the left-wing scum-sucking. Well, let's stop using scum-sucking pig. That's too high for I.F. Stone. I.F. Stone, lauded by the radical left, was closer to a Salenterite than any human being. If you read a book in college called Animals Without Backbones, you'll know what a Salenterite is. It is actually one of the lower classes of animals without backbones. But this liberal piece of Salenterite tissue, I.F. Stone, called this great American caveman and a jet bomber. And he was the man who was parodied as the Mad General in Dr. Strangelove. They said he wanted a nuclear exchange with the Soviets. No, he was a real American. He was a real great American, unlike the wonderful PR men we have now in the military. I could not believe what I'm reading every day. North Korea fires 6 more weapons. And the PR man, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, does nothing but go out for another cocktail with the politicians. Let's start the show rolling here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And in a station dear to my heart, WFTL in Fort Lauderdale, David, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I think it's a disgrace that Obama is cutting one-third of our nukes. And I'd like to also add, does anyone actually...
Well, wait, you mean it's a disgrace because he's not cutting half of them, three-quarters of them, or all of them?
No, no, he shouldn't cut any of our nuclear arsenal. Because,
well, but he, you see, Obama's a college professor who believes we should live in a world without nukes. And since he released prisoners from Guantanamo, you know that at least one of them is now leading the men, killing our men in Afghanistan. Are you aware of that?
I'm not surprised.
Oh, it didn't make it to your local Miami Herald, did it? The Miami Herald didn't report that one of the men released from Gitmo is now a commander in Afghanistan, leading the radical Islamists in killing our Marines in southern Afghanistan. That didn't make it to the L.A. Times, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, L.A. Times, whatever, all aboard?
I guess not. Not from what I've read.
Thanks, David. We have a winner. We have a winner on line 6. Bill out of New York, WOR. No further calls on who it was. Who was I describing in that book?
That'd be the late, great General Curtis LeMay.
Bingo! Play a sound for that one, guys. Get something professional that shows we got a winner. That's good. We got a winner. Bill, would you prefer a copy of Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's? We don't have that. Healing Children Naturally or Psychological Nudity?
I'll go with Psychological Nudity.
Bingo! You get a free copy of Psychological Nudity, which I'm going to reprint because we're out of them again. No bookstores, no distributors, no promotion, no television shows, no radio shows. Back to about the fourth printing. Just shows you what my audience can be. Now, I want to go back to the wonderful book, LeMay, The Life and Wars of General Curtis LeMay, Warren Kozak. He is a man who started out in a very poor farm in Ohio, had to take control of help his family out when he was 8 years old. He had no connections in the military, unlike the military of today, where you get ahead if you know somebody. The man began with nothing. He rose from obscurity. He had no social graces. He had no old boy connections, never went to West Point, bad lineage, and he became America's most innovative and controversial military commander. Curtis LeMay was a national hero. He was celebrated in victory parades and on the cover of Time magazine in 1945. But 20 years later, after the radical left scum took over the media, Hollywood and the vermin in the press vilified him. In fact, the lowlife Salenter at I.F. Stone, the hero of Obama and the leftists, called him the caveman in a jet bomber. And yet he was the man who understood what war was. He was the man who started by flying bi-winged open cockpit planes in the 20s, and he wound up commanding America's post-war fleet of giant B-52 bombers, and he ended his career in an age of intercontinental nuclear missiles. I want to tell you something else I read about him. Here was a man who, unlike the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or the admirals or the generals of today, led his men into combat by flying point in every bombing mission. He insisted on flying the lead airplane into flak. The men followed him. You understand what I'm saying to you? Do you know, look what happened to America now. We have PR men running everything, and that's why we are not winning anything. We have nothing but fakers in usher uniforms. But LeMay was the man. LeMay was the man who helped turn the bombing effort over Europe from an ineffective and costly failure into a success. LeMay was the architect behind the firebombing of Tokyo and 64 other Japanese cities. Now you say, that's terrible. He killed innocent Japanese. Well, it is terrible. But you see, those of you who hate Americans don't understand that if LeMay had not ordered the deaths of these civilians, over 1 million Americans would have died taking the Japanese homeland. That's an established fact that everybody in the war business has acknowledged left, right, and center. No one else comes close to this man, not Ulysses S. Grant, not William Sherman, not George S. Patton, in terms of the number of civilians that were killed under his direct command, over 300,000, perhaps as 500,000. And why did that happen? Was he a bloodthirsty warmonger who hated humanity? According to his biography, he said no. The biographer said no. In the strange calculus of war, by killing so many human beings, LeMay saved millions more by making an invasion of Japan unnecessary. He said most people would not want to make that kind of decision, killing vast numbers of human beings in order to save even more. It requires someone with a ruthless sense of realism, and if anything, Curtis LeMay was a realist. That's what the biographer says. Now, I want you to hear something I read that really struck me at stake. He said, I'll tell you what war is about, he once told Sam Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb. And I want to make a side note. I had the distinct honor and pleasure of interviewing Sam Cohen when I was a local talk show host, and we still have it somewhere in a recording. I've got to find it again. He told Sam Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb, the following. I'll tell you what war is about, he told Mr. Cohen. You've got to kill people, and when you kill enough of them, they stop fighting. Did you hear that? As a judge said about him later on, very few people can really tell the truth, and most people really don't want to hear it. Okay, he did. So did Sherman. People don't want to hear that kind of blunt honesty. You hear that? And so if you add blunt honesty to a brutal sense of realism and a strong devotion to the nation, what you have is Curtis LeMay. I'll read you more from this on the Savage Nation when I come back. The life and wars of General Curtis LeMay, for one reason. It's because he was the most roundly criticized by the radical leftist vermin who criticize every American patriot today and instead extol the lowest of the low like Michael Jackson and Senator Al Frankenstein. I'll be right back. Savage. Nation, yeah, I'll do the news of the day, but you know, it was July 4th week, and I can't let it go without talking about a great American general, Curtis LeMay. The book is Life and Wars of General Curtis LeMay, Warren Kozak. I highly recommend it. I'm going to tell you a little bit more in a minute, but I found a page in the book that I have to read to you because it shouldn't be lost to my audience or to history. Page 243, Brutal LeMay, okay? Quote, the Japanese saved their greatest venom for the B-29 crews that parachuted from stricken planes. Captured B-29 airmen were shot, bayoneted, decapitated, burned alive, or killed as boiling water was poured over them. Other air crew members were beaten to death by civilians and shot with bows and arrows, then decapitated. Perhaps the most appalling episode, according to historian Richard Frank, took place when the Western Japan Military Command gave some medical professors at Kyushu Imperial University, 8 B-29 crewmen. The professor cut them up while alive in a dirty room with a tin table where students dissected corpses. They drained blood and replaced it with salt water. They cut out lungs, livers, and stomachs while the airmen were alive. They stopped blood flow in an artery near the heart to see how long death took. They dug holes in a skull and stuck a knife into the living brains to see what would happen. There was a real fear that the Japanese would execute all prisoners if it looked like they were going to be liberated. To a man, Allied POWs believed the Japanese would kill them if the homeland was invaded, and surviving written documentation supports this belief, footnote number 20. It's worth noting that this was in the background of the minds of the American men who were fighting World War II, as opposed to what is the rubbish that's been fed into the minds of the American children today by the radical communist left who are teaching them. Read the book. Read your historians rather than your historical revisionists. This is The Savage Nation. Met LeMay in person. Scott, San Francisco. KNEW, go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, this is Scott. In 1982, I was getting ready to go into the Air Force to officer training school. My dad was commander at Air Command and Staff College at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama.
God bless him.
Which is in Montgomery. And they had a what they call a gathering of eagles and had a gathering of former World War One, World War Two, Korea, and Vietnam aces and people who made aviation history. Mm. And one of the people I got to meet quite a few World War Two aces, and I got to meet Curtis LeMay, and he came over to our house for breakfast.
Really?
And yes, he did. And he, him and his wife, are really, really nice. He's a very humble man. But what they did, they made an Air Force Now film in our living room, on our quarters at Maxwell Air Force Base, and interviewed him. And I remember very distinctly sitting in a wingback chair in our living room. And he was
he a gruff kind of guy, or he was not like that in your presence?
Yes, he was a gruff kind of guy. He was a small guy. I would say he probably wasn't much taller than maybe like 5'8", and kind of burly. And I remember him smoking his old corn cob pipe. It was kind of funny.
Scott, I want to ask you something since you triggered that idea. I understand many jet pilots are not much taller than that because of the tightness of the cockpit. Is that true?
You know, a lot of them are small guys, but surprisingly, I did meet some big guys. One that strikes me is Robin Olds, who was an ace in Vietnam.
Hmm.
And he was probably 6'3".
Oh, I watched that movie on, what was it called? It was a sequence done on Battles in the Sky or something with digital reproductions of the actual battles. I could not believe the kind of combat missions that were flown against each other going back to, World War II, then, of course, Korea, then the Vietnam era, the Israeli Air Force, the kind of combat that, what do you call it? When they fight each other in jet pilots, what do you call it? Dogfights. There's a DVD series called Dogfights that are amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Hey, let me ask you. You were in the Air Force, Scott. Did you fly in Vietnam?
No, I was not in the Air Force. I was a munition supply officer working with the 1st B-1 bomber base in Dyess Air Force Base, Texas.
The reason I ask is I want to pay special note to a friend's father. Jason, if you're listening, Jason May's father was a man who flew 200 combat missions in Vietnam. I never met the man, but his son gave me his mother gave me her deceased husband's drinking cup from Thailand where the base was, which I just have it as one of my possessions. I consider it one of my great possessions. Anyone who could fly 200 combat missions in Vietnam and survive, to me, is one of the great heroes of my life.
A1 Sky Raiders in Vietnam in 1965 and 66, and he did his 200 missions.
Who
and,
did?
My dad, my father. My
Amazing. Father, well, my hat's off to him and to all the other brave men who saved us from the Nazis in World War II. Thank you very much for that call. This is the Savage Nation. We're talking about real Americans as opposed to the vermin that are extolled by the Solenterates in the media. You could look up the word solenterate. It means animals without backbones. But even amongst animals without backbones, there is an ascending and descending scale. And so not all solenterates are bad.
Savage.
Every day I wake up and it's another shock to the system. Now we have Chairman Mao Tse-Tung Obama in Russia, and he agrees to give up one-third of our nuclear arsenal to the Russians. I don't know how he's getting away with this. I just don't know how. He's outright supporting the communist dictator of Honduras while the people are screaming for democracy. He doesn't help them in Iran. North Korea fires missile after missile. He and his minions in the military stand down and do nothing. He is the most fiscally irresponsible president in history, according to Kevin Hassett, a real economist, in Bloomberg News. And yet, not a peep comes out of the media about this. I am sitting and watching the United States of America being taken apart at the joints. How about you? Having a nice time? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you want to talk about Curtis LeMay, General LeMay, sure. You want to talk about Peter King's statements about Michael Jackass, we can do that. Whatever you'd like to talk about, it's your show. It's the Savage Nation. Obama takes a trip. We don't know what he's on, but he's certainly on a big ego trip. Representative Sping King is speaking the truth about Michael Jackass and Al Franken, Senator Al Frankenstein, goes from a comedy club to the comedy club. Hartford, Connecticut. Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, Curtis LeMay was as feared by the Russians as General Patton was by the Germans before the D-Day invasion. He pushed the envelope. He sent bombers. He sent spy planes. He was constantly probing the Russian borders. He flew missions into Russian territory constantly, and he was always trying to see what their capabilities were. And
now let's go back to Vietnam for one reason. He served under McNamara, who just died today. McNamara was the man who basically caused the American military to lose in Vietnam. Is that correct?
That's correct. My father
was. And what's interesting is that McNamara was once junior to LeMay, but after World War II, when they no longer had any use for the real warriors, they put McNamara above him, and McNamara then became defense secretary under Kennedy. And it was McNamara who fought a war that he had to lose. In fact, LeMay said, you're going to lose this war because you're fighting a limited war. You can't fight war any other way other than either go for it or get out of there. That's what he said. Either just bomb them into the Stone Age or leave Vietnam. It was LeMay who said that.
My father was in Vietnam and Cambodia from 1958 to 62 with the Air Force. They told him to wear T-shirt and jeans and carry an unloaded M14, and he told his sergeant, I'm not carrying an unloaded rifle. You either give it to me loaded, and that was all due to McNamara. My father sent me an email today, and he was celebrating the death of Robert McNamara because he said he killed more American men in Vietnam than the Chinese and the Viet Cong did.
Well, I agree. Between Henry Kissinger and Robert McNamara, we lost in Vietnam, and we've never recovered from that defeat. Oh, add to that Walter Cronkite, a distinguished member of the Solenterate Press.
Yes, sir. And you
You know what? What I do on this show every day until I'm stopped, until they put me out of business, I am going to tell the truth on this program, as much as it may hurt people to hear it. The name of this show is Veritas, The Truth, and I thank you for listening to it. The unadulterated, the unvarnished truth on the Savage Nation. Like it or not, here I am. Like it or not, this is the truth. This is the world that you live in. And, of course, we need men like that back in the military. I'm sure they exist somewhere down in the ranks, but where are they at the upper levels? We still, in essence, have a peacetime military because we are, in essence, at peace. After all, the men are only dying in Afghanistan. North Korea is firing missiles into the ocean. Iran is threatening to blow Israel and then the United States off the map. The world is in upheaval, and Obama doesn't care. He doesn't know that. He assumes it's still the University of Chicago and that he can go to another seminar on a peaceful world without nuclear weapons. San Diego, Patrick, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. There's a terrific film called Fog of War that chronicles LeMay as a person and as a general and gets into the relationship that he and McNamara had. And a very small point was when McNamara was a high-level statistician for the Air Force, he went to LeMay and said, the bombing raids you're doing over Tokyo, if you take these planes down 10,000 feet, you can burn Tokyo to the ground. It was a wooden city at the time. And this is what kind of soldier LeMay was. He said, McNamara, I'd have a couple pilots dead. And McNamara,
he said what?
Would kill a couple of my pilots.
Oh.
Whereas before, there were very little casualties. So the Japanese would have shot them out of the air at that height, and also collateral damage of the burning of the cities and all. And so LeMay was concerned about two or three American soldiers that he would lose. And this is what kind of military guy he was. Could you imagine anyone nowadays being concerned?
Well, look at Bush. Bush burned the U.S. Marines for the last few years of his regime. One Marine after another was unfairly court-martialed, and Bush didn't lift a finger. You know that. Now it's even worse now. Thank you for the call. I'm going to read you another paragraph from the book. If a country is lucky, it will produce a Curtis LeMay in times of extreme danger. Nations need men like LeMay when survival is at stake. But once safe, these men are often rejected because they become walking reminders of events most people would rather forget. As with Curtis LeMay, sometimes these men contribute to their own downfall by continuing to display the belligerence that was necessary during battle, but that does not fit in a world at relative peace. It reminds me of some talk show host that I know. You hear? More than 60 years and three generations after the end of World War II, it is very difficult for anyone born 20, 30, or 40 years after the event to fully comprehend what it was really like to have the entire world at war. Rather than two or three nations fighting against each other, practically every country on the planet, every individual, and every resource was committed to the conflict. It was a war with huge ramifications for the future of mankind. Ladies and gentlemen, where is our Curtis LeMay now? Instead, we have the opposite of Curtis LeMay. We have no Curtis LeMay. We have the opposite. We have kind of guys that look like ushers in a movie theater. Las Vegas, David, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello, Michael. Thanks for having me on the air. First, I'm a high school teacher, just to let you know that not all the kids are getting the revisionist crap. And,
yeah, but you're in a great state of Nevada where there's still freedom and patriotism. You certainly don't teach in California.
Yeah, I know, and that's why Ron Paul came in second here when he was in the primaries. But I just wanted to say my dad flew B-52s, and he flew in World War II, and he was under Curtis LeMay. And besides being a strategic, genius, he was also a tactical one. He's the one that came up with the box formation so that all the B-17s would have mutual support.
And he invented the box formation where they all had fire support at every angle.
That was his doings, and as well as what the other gentleman said earlier about that since they weren't having effective high-level bombings on Japan, they did the low-level ones, and that's what really got him in there. So,
amazing.
So
David, has your dad passed on?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
How old was he when he passed away?
He was 88, and it was just last week, actually, when it happened. So.
Oh, my God. Well, let's all salute your dad. What was his name, David?
Yeah, we knew it was coming, and we were prepared for it.
No, but I mean, please tell us, so everyone hearing the Savage Nation can remember him. What was his name?
Robert Lucian Perkins.
God bless him, David. You're lucky to have had him as a father, and I thank you for calling the program. Oh, God help us with Obama as president, one pacifist socialist. You know, it's a president with training wheels that we have. We have a president with training wheels in office. This man is the commander-in-chief, a pacifist socialist on the order of Neville Chamberlain, a man who goes to Russia and agrees to cut one-third of our nuclear stockpiles. It's unbelievable to me what is going on. Something is wrong with this whole picture. Something is very, very wrong. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I mean, we could talk about this if you want. We could talk about Peter King calling Michael Jackson a pedophile and a pervert. We can talk about Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid introducing Senator-elect Al Frankenstein, a comedian from Minnesota in Washington, D.C. Let's hear clip four. Let's hear that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Leader. I want to thank the leader for
the leader
all your support during and
all right, take
after.
Me to your leader. We got it. Okay, so we have the leader. So they now have a rubber stamp. They now have a rubber stamp. Here we go. Obama sets agenda at press conference. Vice President Joe Biden spoke through his foot again and apparently said that Israel has a green light to bomb Iran. Let's hear clip 11.
Israel can determine for itself as a sovereign nation what's in their interest and what they decide to do relative to Iran or anyone else, whether we agree or not. They're entitled to do that. Any sovereign nation is entitled to do that.
I agree with him. So what about the Honduras? Are they entitled to decide not to let a dictator back in since they're a sovereign nation? You know, I've actually liked Joe Biden over the years. I'll tell you the truth. I came to like Joe Biden during the period when he wanted to run for the presidency. I thought that on foreign affairs, he was the most intelligent and well-spoken of the bunch, incidentally. So don't think I'm just going to sit here and bash everyone as a Democrat. I won't do it. Biden is the most measured and apparently someone who's a realist and knows what's going on in the world, unlike some of the others. You know, listen to clip 12.
If the Netanyahu government decides to take a course of action different than the one being pursued now, that is their sovereign right to do that. That is not our choice. We cannot dictate to another sovereign nation what they can and cannot do when they make a determination, if they make a determination, that they're existentially threatened, their survival is threatened by another country. Israel has a right to determine what's in its interest, and we have a right, and we will determine what's in our interest.
Well, I pray to God that this means that we will not see Obama ordering the firebombing of Tel Aviv. I'm glad to hear that at least someone in the administration is signaling that Israel has a right to defend itself. 1-800-449-8255. Let's lighten it up a bit. It is Monday after the July 4th weekend. I did cook a hot dog on Saturday. I did actually do two of them. I ate the bad food. Let's see, any other high point? I don't know that I... Oh, fireworks. Saw a great fireworks show. Terrific. I was on a beach, watched the fireworks. Super duper. Super duper. That's why I thought I would read the Curtis LeMay book and bring it to the show on Monday, which I did. I did my homework for you. And here we are. What is the most dangerous city in the United States? I don't know, but take a guess where Berkeley, California fits. That's right. Berkeley, California, that citadel of goodness and liberalism, is known as crime-infested and dangerous. It's the 43rd most dangerous city in the United States, according to recently released data by online relocation resource Neighborhood Scout. You hear this? It's interesting. Not in Berkeley. How could it be a dangerous city when it's so peaceful? With all the LSD and potheads running around in their 50s and 60s, you would think it would be a great place to live. Well, interestingly, it is not. I wouldn't pack your bags and move to Berkeley if you're looking for a safe city. No, I would not. No, siree, Bob. Harry in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. Curtis LeMay, if I'm not mistaken, also established NORAD, you know, drilling into the Colorado Mountains as a forward observation during the Cold War, and also established a peripheral warning system that extended over the pole to the North Pole.
Well, you know, what's interesting is Obama could convert those missile silos into birthing clinics for illegal aliens.
Yeah.
You know, think of all of the military money that's going to waste that Obama can now divert to birthing clinics for illegal aliens so that they have as many babies as they want.
Well, Mike, you know, I saw the interview that Curtis LeMay gave under the wing of a B-52 during the Vietnam War. And he was asked, what are we doing wrong? What are we not doing? And he said, we should bomb North Vietnam back to the Stone Age and not leave anything higher than 3 feet in the entire country until they unconditionally surrender. And we had the firepower to do it. China was weak. The Russians were substantially weaker. We could have brought the North Vietnamese to their knees in a matter of weeks if we had had the will. And saved a lot of...
Let's look back. Let's look at this in retrospect. Why were we in Vietnam to begin with is the question. I don't even think we belong there. You look back now, all these men who died, all these men who were injured, all the civilians who were killed, for what? Vietnam today is a modified communist/capitalist nation at relative peace. Why were millions of people killed? For what reason? I mean, you want to think about it. But once you unleash your military, you should unleash them to win, not to lose. So I understand what you're saying, but this is a very... difficult question, in a sense. I don't believe we should have been in Vietnam.
It was the CETO treaty, that Southeast Asian Treaty Organization, where attack on one is an attack on all, so we were treaty bound.
Well, I believe, who got us into Vietnam? Let's not forget, it was a Democrat named John Fitzgerald Kennedy. I think people forget that. They like to think Republicans are warmongers. It was John Fitzgerald Kennedy who got us into Vietnam. Let's never forget that. It was a gigantic tactical and strategic error, in my opinion. Right, because they believed in a domino theory. That is, if Vietnam became communist, all of Asia would fall. Is that right?
That's it. Yeah. That's
All of Asia has fallen. It's all communist, basically, one way or the other. I mean, where is it not a communist? Where is there no communism in Asia? Let's look at Japan. The one shining example of a great Asian nation that is not a communist nation, it's Japan. So you had a domino theory. You have China, you have Vietnam, you have Myanmar, you have the other countries. Okay, Thailand, you could say, is not a communist dictatorship, so it's a sort of quasi-Islamic dictatorship in Thailand, if you want to look at it that way, even though it's a Buddhist nation. You have the military now basically running things behind the scenes. It's not a communist nation. It certainly didn't fall to communism, did it?
No, I think South Vietnam, the Vietnam was a replay of the Koreas, like North and South Korea. I think that's the way that JFK saw it, just like Harry Truman. And I think he wanted to be another Harry Truman.
But what I'm saying is, looking back today, how many years later, how many years ago was Vietnam? For God's sakes, you're talking about 1965, 66. You're talking about 40 years ago, right? Almost a half a century ago, you look back now, you take a deep breath, and you say they were wrong. We had no business being there. That does not take away the genius and the heroism of the men who were sent to fight for their country. I'll be right back.
Savage.
am talking today about Curtis LeMay, the day that the leftist media is celebrating the life of Robert McNamara, when they were the alpha and omega of each other with regard to duty to the nation. McNamara was the opposite of LeMay. McNamara destroyed the U.S. military. McNamara saw that the U.S. military was defeated. McNamara never led his troops anywhere. McNamara was a bean counter inside the Pentagon, elevated way beyond his pay scale by JFK. And LeMay was the real stuff, the right stuff. I want to repeat, you know, look, I read the book on his biography, the LeMay by Kozak over the weekend. And when I read that the guy led all of the bombing missions himself in a lead plane, he didn't sit in the Pentagon looking at a TV screen, and his men loved him. I mean, they worshipped him. What kind of generals are there today? You think, do we have generals today who would lead waves of bombers into enemy fire? I don't know. Where are they? They seem like they're all politicians rather than warriors. Mike in San Francisco, KNEW, welcome to the program.
Yeah, yes, Michael, you're right. I'm a Korean vet, and I flew bombers in during the Korean War, B-36s.
Wait, you flew B-36s?
I was a crew member on the B-36, yeah, that's correct.
Amazing. How old a gentleman are you, Mike?
I'm 75.
Oh, you're a youngster yet.
Kid.
And you're still living in San Francisco. You survived it, huh?
Yeah, I live in Walnut Grove, a little town south of Sacramento.
Oh, well, you don't live in the heart of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's why you're still living. You probably would have had your house set on fire by the folks in San Francisco if they had known you flew in Korea.
Well, unfortunately, one of my daughters does live in San Francisco.
Mike, thanks for calling KNEW Radio. This is The Savage Nation. Another couple of big hours coming up. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Watching two 4th of July parades in Wantour and Les Speaker Park. Today I was just taking a walk through Wantour here at the American Legion Hall, firehouse down the street, a fire memorial a few blocks from here. And it really reminded me of the great men and women who have sacrificed so much for our country. People fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan today, cops, firefighters, teachers, none of whom really get much credit. And yet for the last, I don't know how long now, this lowlife, Michael Jackson, his name, his face, his picture, is all over the newspapers, television, radio. So what we hear about is Michael Jackson. And let's knock out the psychobabble. This guy was a pervert. He was a child molester. He was a pedophile. And to be giving this much coverage to him day in and day out, what does it say about us as our country? I just think it's too,
it says
we're too politically correct. No one wants to stand up and say.
Blue Monday. Good job. Thanks for speaking out, King. I know you don't have the yaitzes to come on the Savage Nation, but okay, I'll give you the pass. Here come Tuesday. You got to play it louder. I don't know if my earrings are
going to work. No time.
Why are they picking on Sarah Palin, that vermin in that salmon sweater? You know what I love is you got Andrea Mitchell getting up there with the bleached hair with eyebrows look like they were pasted on by Groucho Marx's hairdresser saying, I don't believe there's a scandal about Sarah Palin. I don't believe it at all. How about a scandal about you, Andrea Mitchell, and your husband? How about you and your husband? Why is there no scandal about you, what you did to this country? You're pointing your finger at Sarah Palin saying there's no scandal? How about pointing a finger at Andrea Mitchell and her great husband? You know who her husband was? The government media complex from day one. How about an FBI investigation of Andrea Mitchell and her old man? instead of about Sarah Palin. You think you're going to get away with it forever with that salmon sweater of yours and that... Oh, one of these days, Alice. One of these days, Alice. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We've got Chairman Mao Tse Obama in Russia saying he'd gladly give up one-third of our nuclear arsenal while the arse in North Korea is firing missiles into the sea and the pacifist socialist descendant of Neville Chamberlain from Chicago does nothing except give up our weapons. We have been celebrating today, post-July 4th, a real American other than Michael Jackass was celebrating General Curtis LeMay on the Savage Nation, just so you know that there is still somebody left in the media who has not lost his mind. If I can keep my head when all those around me are losing theirs and blaming it on me, then I will be a man, my son. Go read it. Read it for yourself and see what it really means. Go ahead. All right? Go read it yourself. Go read If by Rudyard Kipling and you'll see what it actually means. Here I am banned in Britain. Here I am vilified by the Salenterites in the media. But I keep going on. Why? Because I read Rudyard Kipling, If you can keep your head when all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you'll be a man, my son. Tell your child about that one. Because if you stand alone and if you walk alone and if you do the right thing, you will be vilified by those who are either don't know what the right thing is to do or refuse to do it or, in fact, are doing the wrong thing. Be prepared to be vilified. You're never going to be rewarded. You won't be rewarded in your lifetime, necessarily. Don't expect honors. Don't expect, rewards. Don't expect to be invited anywhere. Okay? Just do it for the sake of doing the right thing. That's what you should tell your children. That's all. Oh, I can't wait till this is over already with this minstrel. The minstrel is dead. Unbelievable to me. What was he? A dancer and a singer. Look at this. Look what they're carrying on, these schmucks. Look at these schmucks. New York City, WOR. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I think that the situation is even worse. I think one of the world's great monotheistic religions has been contaminated with psychobabble related to Michael Jackson. You know the guy, Shmuley, who wrote the book Kosher Sex?
You know what? Please don't mention anyone like him. I'm not a big fan of him.
Anyway, he said that Jackson was overcompensating for a lack of love in his childhood.
I don't care what he said. He's a schmuck himself. Thanks for the call. Anyone who calls himself a rabbi and goes on the radio and says, hello, this is your rabbi. You know what? Click. He wouldn't last 10 seconds on my show. No one wants to hear anyone say that they're their rabbi. First of all, it's a Christian nation, by and large, not a Jewish nation. Let's be very clear. All right? I mean, what is this, I'm your rabbi on the radio? What is that all about? What is this, WEVD? If it's WEVD, you can get away with it. WEVD. Actually, it was WEVB. E.V. Dubois? EVD, right. E.V. Dubois, communist. There was a communist radio station in New York years ago. WEVD. Right? Oh, that was Eugene V. Debs. I'm sorry. A communist. They named a radio station for him. And they had every ethnic group in New York. They all start out as commies, and then they make money, and they wind up Republicans. They get off the boat, they're communists. The minute they make a buck and buy themselves a house or somewhere, suddenly they become a Republican. The first day they get here, oh, yeah, I want government this, I want government that, I want the government handout. Then they put a few dollars away. They see the government's going to take it out of their pocket. They're no longer a Democrat or a comm. Hey, do you have the Joe and Paul song ready? You know where I was going with that.
Oh, God. Joe and Paul,
I'll explain this in a minute. This is an insider song. That was Andrea Mitchell's grandfather singing Joe and Paul a Farganiggin. Although today she tries to pass herself off as a wasp. 1-800-449-8255. I get such a kick out of that song. What it is, it's an old Yiddish radio jingle that I get a kick out of. That was played way back before I was even born, I think, for a wave of immigrants. And they used to shop in this store. And if you translate it, it says, bring your younger son in for a gabardine. Something like, play it again. Let me hear if I can understand it. It's in the Yiddish. Again, this is Andrea Mitchell's grandfather. You know something? Today they could copy an ad like that and make it in English. They'd have a hit. Although with America Today, I don't think it would work in English anymore. There aren't that many people who speak English left in New York. It would have to be in another dialect of Spanish, some type of Spanish dialect. Not even Castilian Spanish would work anymore. You'd have to play it with some other pyramid kind of element in it. That's all. Obama takes a trip. Rep King speaks the truth. And Senator Al Frankenstein goes to Washington. From a comedy club to the ultimate comedy club, the U.S. Senate. So here we are in the Savage Nation. New climate strategy, track the world's wealthiest. You hear this? Track the world's wealthiest. So they're going to basically eat the rich. That's what's going to happen under the socialists running the world now. So there'll be a tax on yachts. There'll be a tax on cars. There'll be a tax on jet travel. They will cripple the economy. But that's the way it's going to work under Obama, because he apparently is not rich. He only flies around in Air Force One with an entourage of about 3,000. I wonder what his carbon credits are. He's accruing some kind of carbon tax right now that you're going to have to pay. How much do you think the carbon footprint is that Obama just spent going to Moscow? And how much did Michelle in the carbon footprint that she, when she went to Paris, was her carbon footprint large or small? I flew over the weekend speaking to the pilot, and the guy's a young guy, and he's a fine pilot. He says to me, he's very worried that in a few years, if the biggest scam in the history of the world is allowed to go through, being promoted by Al Gore and Goldman Sachs, the so-called carbon tax, if this goes through, which is the most obscene of all scams, if it goes through, fundamentally, it will cripple the airline industry. It's amazing to me what's going on and how you don't care, but how are you going to get around? How are you going to fly? How are you going to fly? You idiots don't even understand that it's not carbon dioxide that's at fault. Incidentally, there's no global warming. It's global cooling. But let us assume that you're concerned about the Earth heating up for a moment. If you actually eliminate all the carbon dioxide being emitted on the planet, you'd be dead within a few weeks. Let's start with that. But since most of the schmuck drug addicts in the media and most of the schmuck drug addicts in Congress don't even understand that all animal life that we know requires carbon dioxide to live, the science illiterates in the media, the science illiterates in Congress don't even understand that they're conducting a war on food production itself. This is amazing to me that they don't even have a fifth grader's knowledge of carbon dioxide, and yet the schmucks are passing laws against carbon dioxide, the enemy. I expect a cartoon to be created for children soon, showing the evil carbon dioxide with a villain's mask. And they're going to wipe it off the planet. They're going to save the Earth from evil carbon dioxide. Well, my friends, as you well know, plants require carbon dioxide to conduct photosynthesis. It's a basic law of biology that you learn in the first grade if you go to a decent school. And you don't learn it all if you become a congressman. I'll be right back. Savage. Here are the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. On the top left, Obama agrees to cut one-third of America's nukes and got nothing in return. On the right side, Barack Obama, the most fiscally irresponsible president in history, according to a real economist named Kevin Hassett, a true economist. Obama has bet everything on passing health care this year, but he can't afford it. Nobody knows how he's going to do it. He's bankrupting America. It's like the Mad King Ludwig of Bavaria. Look it up. British didn't consult the United States on the Michael Savage exclusion from their wonderful land of the United Kingdom. Well, why, if they didn't consult the United States, would they tell us that last week? Answer, because they did. White House won't reveal how much Michelle Obama's European vacation cost taxpayers. Of course not. Ousted Honduran president expected in Washington. He's a dictator. He's a communist. The people threw him out. And yet Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton will meet this communist dictator of Honduras, somebody supported by Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua, Fidel Castro of Cuba, and Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. So now we have Hillary Clinton and Obama on the same side as the Castros and Chavez and the Sandinistas. What does that mean? Well, it means you've had a revolution in America, but you don't know it because you're afraid to say the C word. You're afraid of being called a racist, aren't you? Those are some of the topics on the Savage Nation. There are others. And the phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. The biggest story to those of you who don't have a brain is that Michael Jackass is dead. A man who Representative Peter King, Republican of New York, had some fine words for. And, of course, we played them on the Savage Nation. Houston, Texas, Kathy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank God you bring the truth to us.
Thank God.
And also about Michael Jackson and Anna Marie Nicole and the fact that the National Enquirer is running the news media now.
That's right. That's right. ABC, ABC plus CBS plus NBC plus CNN plus Fox equals NATIONALINQUIRER.
Right, but Elizabeth Taylor and Lisa Marie Presley and all those people who admired him and fawned over him. Well, Elizabeth Taylor is known for her creepy attitudes with Roddy McDowell and Montgomery Clift and Rock Hudson and her creature.
You know what? I don't care about this guy. I think he was just a singer. But what got me very worried is that President Obama had the nerve last week to say he grew up on Michael Jackson, that he has Michael Jackson's tunes in his iPod. I said, that explains everything. He didn't grow up on Bach, Beethoven, or Handel. Apparently, he prefers I'm So Bad to Handel's Water Music. And that's why we have a president who is on training wheels. The man is a president on training wheels, only we live in a very dangerous world. Have you ever heard Handel's Water Music? Have you ever heard Eine kleine Nacht Music? Have you ever heard an opera written by Handel? Staring out on a warm deck, looking up at the moon on a starry night, and let your mind go up to the heavens, listening to Handel, a Handel opera. You'll know what I'm talking about. We live in such a debased world that a song and dance man with many mental problems is elevated to a level beyond that of the great composers of all time. And we have a president who doesn't even refer to the great composers. Instead, he refers to an ordinary song and dance man as some great musician who we grew up on. And you wonder why we're living in such destitute times. It is where the lowest common denominator seems to rule everything. Play the Hallelujah Chorus by Handel.
Hallelujah.
Oh, my God.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
I think of all the great men who died for this country. I feel like crying when I listen to this. Not crying out of pity for myself or for them. Crying out of what's happened to America. From a melting pot to a chamber pot in one generation. You got this. You hear this? This is what they hold up. You hear this? Like hieroglyphics to a beat. Hieroglyphics to a beat. That's what we descended to. Turn it. I really can't listen to this idiocy, this dumb idiocy, this moronic, stupid idiocy. Moronic, stupid idiocy. You play it if you like it. You play it for your children and lower their brain power. Put them on Ritalin afterwards when they can't go to sleep because they listen to this submoronic, idiotic beat. Go back to Handel for a minute. Let the people hear real music instead of this. You know, I got to tell you something. Over the weekend, I watched the fireworks like everybody else. They were beautiful if you were lucky enough to see them. And I do enjoy fireworks displays. If they're long enough and they're good enough, they're great enough to remind you of the Revolutionary War, which, by the way, was fought against my good friends in Britain, the ancestors of these buck-toothed morons in Britain who have banned me from their wonderful country of oppression, where every average citizen basically lives inside a caste system. But the fact of the matter is, never forget that the American colonists considered themselves British, but they were fighting against the autocracy of Britain. And today it's interesting that I am the first victim in America of the new autocracy of both the British and American left-wing governments.
Savage.
Classical music, the great minds of European music, to the degenerate music of Michael Jackson. I don't know how else to say it, because degenerate doesn't actually mean perverted necessarily. But when you consider the level of the soul and mind that it takes to create Handel's Messiah, compared with a jumping jack on the stage, for example, you realize that is a descent, not an ascent. It's a decline. It's a decline and fall. So Western civilization has declined and fallen, as exemplified by Michael Jackass. And to see the media falling all over themselves to celebrate this, what is he? A singer, a song and dance man, ignoring the great men and women of history is astounding to me, how they get away with this. What it is they're reaching for the lowest common denominator. The largest audience is the lowest common denominator. So they're not aiming for the intelligent listener. They're not aiming for the listener who has any discernment. They're not aiming for the listener who understands relativity. They're aiming for pure, unadulterated numbers. In other words, if you have many more people who simply listen to your show, doesn't matter what their brain level is, you have higher ratings. But I would suspect that if you would evaluate, although my show is the third largest radio show in the United States of America, I would guess that if you could rank it by IQ, intelligence quotient, my show would be 10 times higher than Rush Limbaugh's. Now, that doesn't mean that many of you don't listen to Rush and me. I understand that. But I tend to skew towards a higher IQ and a higher income level by all data in every station. In other words, people who earn more and people who are smarter listen to Michael Savage, some of whom don't listen to any other show. Believe me, I know who they are. Doesn't mean everyone who listens is a genius or a high earner. But I tend to skew towards the higher income earner and the higher IQ. I don't think that they are big fans of Michael Jackson, incidentally. I know I'm not. So in light of what I've just said to you, the preamble is leading up to the following. I was standing out on a deck the other night. Warm, balmy ocean air coming at me. I had had a lot to drink, I have to admit it. It was after July 4th, but I had a lot to drink. I wanted to drink a lot. I was in the mood to drink that night. I never drink during the day. I never drink during a show. But if I want to drink, I'll drink what I want to drink and the amount I want to drink. And I drank a lot. And I turned on, just by chance, a local radio station. And I had a superb sound system in this place. I was out on a deck. It was a hot night. It was like 9 o'clock at night. And I hit a Handel opera, coming from Lake Geneva. You know, one of those live operas that you get sometimes on NPR. This is one of the good things that they do. I played it as loud as I could. I actually started to shudder. I shuddered and I looked up at the stars. I looked up at the moon. I literally felt my soul climbing to the stars. I felt something lift me, elevate me. That's what liberation means through art. Liberation means to liberate, to lift you. To lift you. I was lifted by Handel. Are you lifted by Michael Jackson? Are you lifted by a man who mutilated himself surgically to make himself look like a freak of freaks? Are you elevated by a man who jumps around a drug addict? Let's forget his proclivity sexually, okay? No one is an angel, so he had a thing for little boys. In America, that's considered normal, I suppose, but that's not the issue with me. It's the fact that he was only a musician. So what? What did he achieve that was great other than hitting the lowest common denominator? That's all. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So play Handel for 1 second, and then we'll go back to regular programming. Play Handel's Messiah. Listen, it may even reach those of you who watch MSNBC. I love the best where he wrote a requiem for his father. And who was the composer? Anyone who can guess that wins a free copy of my book, Psychological Nudity. Who wrote a requiem for his father as a celebration, actually a memorial of his father's death? Who knows the name of that composer? Whoever knows that gets a free copy of my book. Is that what we're playing now, Beowulf? No, of course not. That is not, but this is close to it. Who can name it? 1-800-449-8255. Houston, Texas. Gary, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just want to say that. You know, in the Israeli military, the generals are the ones that bust down the doors and they go in there and then the enemy soils themselves.
Well, is that still true in Israel?
It is. My cousin's a captain in the paratroopers. He told me about it. And yes, their high officers actually lead into battle, make arrests, and do all that kind of stuff in the field. Of course,
are you talking about generals leading the troops? Generals or captains?
No, actual generals do get down there in the streets and go get people.
Well, that's why Israel still exists as a nation. It's why it hasn't fallen apart totally, despite its social degeneration. Apparently, its military still has great dignity and integrity. Thank you for the call. There's nothing more we could say about that. New York City, W.R. Chesare, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call. Was the composer Mozart?
What was the name of the piece? Hold on a minute. Beowulf, you've got it ready to go. Play it. Just play it for a moment. There it is. There it is. To me, this is the greatest piece of music ever written. Play it as loud as you can. Play it to wipe out Michael Jackass. Play it to wipe out Andrea Mitchell. Play it to wipe out the schmucks in the media. Play it to wipe out the lowlifes in high places. Wipe them out of my soul! Wipe the vermin out of my soul! Get them out of my mind! Wipe out the people who leave balloons and teddy bears for a singer! Get them out of my mind, my sight! My soul itself is crying from this insanity! America of losers! Fat, stupid idiots! What a nation! Degenerated from classical music to Michael Jackson. In one breath, we woke up and we were no longer a nation. From a melting pot to a chamber pot. All right, turn it on. The media did it to us. In case you want to know who destroyed America, it wasn't the politicians. It was not the politicians. It was the vermin in the media. They destroyed America. One of these days, I'll actually explain to you who they are, who started it, who started the downfall, when the media turned on America, and who the chief cockroach was who started the downturn. High in the constellation would be a man like Walter Cronkite, for example, who looked like America's grandfather, but in fact was America's enemy, in my opinion. He was the man who single-handedly declared the Tet Offensive in Vietnam a victory, when in fact it was not a victory. It was U.S. troops who held out against the Vietnamese. They had the victory, but this longtime wobbly left-winger, Walter Cronkite, whatever his name is the man who turned against the American people in Vietnam. That, to me, signifies one of the great turning points in the American media when it signally turned against this nation, and it's never come back from it until talk radio emerged, and men like me appeared in the media to try and right the ship that is spinning in a circle going down the drain. 1-800-449-8255. I said it all. There's nothing more to say on that topic. If you'd like to comment on some of the other topics of the day, anything but Michael Jackass, I don't care about him. I never thought he was a fine musician. I never thought he was a great man. I never thought he was a great American. There's nothing to celebrate about Michael Jackson. And anyone in the media who continues to do this is the reason America is in the sorry state that it is in. Period. End of story. So that's all. That's why I'm talking about Curtis LeMay, General Curtis LeMay. I spent time talking about him today. I don't know when this is going to end. I don't understand how this goes on and on and on. I don't know how men and women get up in the morning, look themselves in the mirror, and frankly don't throw themselves out of a hotel window, these talking heads who do this to the country. I don't know how they keep themselves from doing it other than I'm assuming they're all on drugs. I'm assuming they know that they're no good. They know they're rats. They know they destroyed the country and stabbed us in the back. And they also know that they are worthless people, which is why they go to psychiatrists and why they're on medication. It's the only explanation for what is going on in the American media today. New York City, WOR, Andy, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, you remind me exactly of my sixth grade teacher, Mr.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad I've moved up to that level.
Oh, well, let me tell you, he was a great, great man. He was an ex-Marine, Korea, as well as Vietnam.
Oh, well, in those days, you're talking about a long time ago. I remember when I was a kid in high school in Queens in New York in the 50s, most of my teachers were World War II veterans. They were as tough as nails. We didn't have the pothead hippies yet coming in to tell us America was no good.
He was a man's man. He gave me a personal book out of his library because we had to do, the class had to do a book report on a military leader, and I couldn't choose one. I didn't know what to do. He gave me one of his personal books from a library. I still have it today. I treasure it to this day. That had about a half dozen men. And I happened to pick Curtis Emerson LeMay. And when I heard you talking, I knew exactly who you were talking about before you finished your first sentence at the beginning of the show. And, Michael, you just made my week. You made my year.
But, Andy, a guy like Curtis LeMay, gruff, cigar-chomping, didn't talk a lot, short, mean, scowled, he wouldn't last 10 minutes in today's military.
Michael, you watch. The absolute downfall of the country will be when we have, and I really don't care who takes this the wrong way, when we have the first female chief of staff of the Army, that's when we know it's all over.
But wait a minute. We had a female general in the Army, and she turned around and sued the military, didn't she? You remember that case a few years ago under Bush?
You are 100% right.
One of the first things she did was sue the Army for sexism.
And they're also trying right now, secretly behind the scenes, Hillary and Obama are silently trying to castrate the United States Marines. I have some family.
That's right, because the U.S. Marines are still in a class by themselves, and I know that they don't like them because they don't answer to the congresswomen very nicely. Thank you. And never forget that it was Congresswoman Pat Schroeder of Colorado who single-handedly almost destroyed the United States Naval Aviation, the ability of the naval aviators. She went after them tooth and claw with the fake story that they topped a woman in a hotel, in a hotel. They picked on women. Remember what she did? The witch hunt? Pat Schroeder, communist, Colorado. She's the one who almost destroyed naval aviation in the United States of America. You may think that this is all lightweight stuff. These people hate the country. These people would like to see us as a satellite of a new world order communist dictatorship, and they're very close to have won everything. Make no mistake about it, Obama is exactly them. Obama is an internationalist. Obama is basically catering to the world powers. Obama is in Russia right now saying he will destroy one-third of America's nuclear arsenal. These are frightening things going on. And so you may as well enjoy as much as you can out of the United States of America today. We have the worst people in American history running the country today. Bar none, maybe 5% of Congress are people who actually think about America and what's best for America, if that high. We have the most venal and the lowest common denominator running this country today, and I don't know where this ends. I don't know how much worse it can get, but it certainly will get worse before it gets better. I'll be right back. Savage. Break from heavy metal on the Savage Nation, since it's all about music today and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, with Michael Jackson rated 12,000th on a list of musicians. I thought I'd play some people in the upper tier, so you know the difference between someone rated 12,000th and somebody ranked in the top tier of greats in the world of music. After all, you're celebrating a great musician, aren't you? I suppose they're going to have to take his brain to Albert Einstein College and see what enabled him to produce such great music such as I'm Bad. Mariachi by Pavarotti on the Savage Nation. Tomorrow I will not be celebrating Michael Jackson's life. I'll be celebrating that thank God he's being buried and it's over soon so that the American cattle can get back into their... Well, what's the difference? What's the point of me getting upset over this? If you weren't upset over it, you wouldn't be listening to me. Let's put it to you that way. Whatever my audience is, it doesn't really matter. You would not be spending your valuable time right now listening to my show if you liked Michael Jackson. Okay, let me put it to you that way. Let's put it to you in that context. I'm sick of this already. How much can you take of this garbage? You'd think he was Handel and Mozart in one. You'd think he was Handel and Mozart and Beethoven wrapped up in one. A man who destroyed himself with surgery. He was so crazy. A drug addict. And look what they're doing. Who's doing this to your mind? Again, the Salenterates in the media. Animals without backbones with pancake makeup. Animals without backbones who know how to make a Windsor knot have done this to your country. Thank God for talk radio. God bless America. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Ray in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I heard your comment about Peter King. He is my congressman. The man is definitely one of the 10% good guys.
Yeah, he's a good guy, but he won't come on the Savage Nation. So I respect him for this statement that he made about Jackson, but I don't respect him for not coming on this program.
He tells it like it is, Michael.
So do I. So why would he be afraid to come on this show?
That I couldn't tell you.
All right, good. You know, no one's 100% except me. 1-800-449-825. Former Defense Secretary Robert McNamara dies. That'll be the next celebration. A bean-counting weasel who stabbed our troops in the back and then went on a crying tour in America about what he did to our troops in Vietnam is now held up by the media as a great American man, when in fact it was Curtis LeMay who was a far better man. Other stories, you wouldn't know this over the weekend, but your friend in North Korea shot rockets again in a provocation, and Obama did nothing. He looked the other way. Our ships may as well have their propellers taken off them. It's like, you know, Battleship Potemkin. Those of you who know the Eisenstein movie Battleship Potemkin or vaguely remember it from college film class. You know, I'll never forget that movie. I remember I was quite young. I was in a village theater, the West Village, I think, and they were showing Battleship Potemkin. And I'll make this quick because it's not a very popular movie, but a group of people in the audience, some young people, started to laugh at some of the scenes. I guess they thought it was comic to see Russian naval officers and naval men dying on a ship. They were laughing. They thought it was a Charlie Chaplin movie. They were probably high. And a Russian couple sitting next to me, who I didn't know, looked at each other, and they were appalled. They said to each other, why are they laughing? Why are these Americans laughing at the scene in Battleship Potemkin? And, of course, that stuck with me all my life. It's interesting to me what sticks in your mind, you know, as you go through life. What sticks in your mind and what doesn't stick in your mind. It's amazing to me. That stuck in my mind for some reason. But now we come to an age where we have still one of the, maybe the greatest Navy on earth, being run by perhaps not the greatest leadership in the history of the United States Navy. They may as well take the propellers off our ships and just turn them into floating birthing clinics for what good they're doing us. They did nothing when Iran was threatening us. They do nothing when North Korea is threatening us. What in the world did we spend these trillions of dollars for, I ask myself? What do we need missiles and ships and trained men and women if we have leaders who are unwilling to authorize them launching on our enemies? Now you say, well, maybe Obama did the right thing by not reacting to North Korea because, after all, they haven't blown us up yet. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at North Korea is this, which is that fire the missiles from our cruisers in the Sea of Japan and wipe out the launch pads. I didn't say annihilate any cities in North Korea. I said destroy the launching pads so this lunatic can't provoke a world war. Wipe him out. Say, well, if you do that, he'll launch an artillery attack on South Korea. My answer is he's going to launch an artillery attack on South Korea at some point anyway, and you may as well get him while he's weak rather than while he's strong. And I think the long and short of this discussion is that the United States Navy has become a disgrace under Admiral Mike Mullen, who has now been elevated under Bush and now Obama to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. His parents were public relations agents in Hollywood.
Savage. Warning. The
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here are some of the topics that we've been discussing today on the Savage Nation. Representative Peter King spoke the truth. You heard what he said, didn't you? Endless Michael Jackson coverage everywhere. I call him the king of pill popping. And pretty soon they're going to have his funeral, and I don't know if I'll be able to take it anymore. But over the weekend, Representative Peter King in New York finally stood up and told the truth. He called Michael Jackson a pervert.
For the last, I don't know how long now, this lowlife, Michael Jackson, his name, his face, his picture, is all over the newspapers, television, radio. So what we hear about is Michael Jackson. And let's knock out the psychobabble. This guy was a pervert, he was a child molester, he was a pedophile. And to be giving this much coverage to him day in and day out, what does it say about us as our country? I just think it's too, you know, we're too politically correct. No one wants to stand up and say, we don't need Michael Jackson.
Well, Representative King, it's about time somebody, aside from those who know what's going on, called the media out on this insanity. And that's the reason why the media is celebrating Michael Jackson. Not in spite of the fact that he was a perv, but because of it. Perversion is all the media celebrates. Real Americans are ignored. Tea parties ignored. Patriots ignored. Soldiers ignored. All ignored on the 4th of July. Instead, the birthday of our nation has become a celebration of the seven deadly sins. Al Frankenstein goes to Washington. The comedian Al Frankenstein showed up in Washington getting ready to be sworn in as a senator. Huh. Already he's in lockstep with the rest of the neo-Marxist crowd. He even called Harry Reid Mr. Leader. Obama overseas. Here's Obama on another overseas trip, this week in Russia, visiting with Medvedev and Putin, giving up one-third of America's nuclear arsenal. This is the latest in a long list of foreign countries that Obama has been to since he was elected only a few months ago. He's been to Turkey, Egypt, the Czech Republic, Mexico, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, France, Canada, England, and Germany. And that doesn't include the trips he made during the presidential campaign. You've heard me say it before in this program. Obama doesn't want to be president of the United States. He dreams of being president of the world. After all, he solved all of our problems, hasn't he? And not only does he want to be president of the world, he wants to be salesman of the world. At the same time that Russia is building up its military against us, Obama's visit has been the occasion to announce $1.5 billion worth of trade deals with Russia. Boeing and PepsiCo are both going to make huge new investments in Russia. Nothing wrong with that. Apparently, from that perspective, that's a good deal. But that's not the problem with Obama. His perspective is global, not local. Remember all those liberal bumper stickers that say, think globally, act locally? Well, Obama is thinking and acting globally, just as George Bush before him. Nothing wrong with that necessarily, but he hasn't solved all of America's problems first, has he? Why not put in some Buy American clauses? Well, that's anathema to him. Why make trade deals with unfriendly foreign powers, then stopping American jaw bleeding? Well, I guess he does this because he believes that he is the president of the world. After all, he spent as much time in Indonesia as he did in the United States. So Afghanistan is more important to him than Arkansas. New Delhi is more important to him than a New York deli. And Saudi Arabia is more important to him than South Dakota. Now, over July 4th weekend, I read a biography of a real American, a wonderful book, LeMay, The Life and Wars of General Curtis LeMay, Warren Kozak. He is a man who started out in a very poor farm in Ohio, had to take control of help his family out when he was 8 years old. He had no connections in the military, unlike the military of today, where you get ahead if you know somebody. The man began with nothing. He rose from obscurity. He had no social graces. He had no old boy connections, never went to West Point, bad lineage, and he became America's most innovative and controversial military commander. Curtis LeMay was a national hero. He was celebrated in victory parades and on the cover of Time magazine in 1945. But 20 years later, after the radical left scum took over the media, Hollywood and the vermin in the press vilified him. In fact, the lowlife Solenter at I.F. Stone, the hero of Obama and the leftists, called him the caveman in a jet bomber. And yet he was the man who understood what war was. He was the man who started by flying bi-winged open cockpit planes in the 20s, and he wound up commanding America's post-war fleet of giant B-52 bombers, and he ended his career in an age of intercontinental nuclear missiles. I want to tell you something else I read about him. Here was a man who, unlike the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or the admirals or the generals of today, led his men into combat by flying point in every bombing mission. He insisted on flying the lead airplane into flak. The men followed him. You understand what I'm saying to you? Do you know, look what happened to America now. We have PR men running everything, and that's why we are not winning anything. We have nothing but fakers in usher uniforms. But LeMay was the man. LeMay was the man who helped turn the bombing effort over Europe from an ineffective and costly failure into a success. LeMay was the architect behind the firebombing of Tokyo and 64 other Japanese cities. And so if you add blunt honesty to a brutal sense of realism and a strong devotion to the nation, what you have is Curtis LeMay. I'll read you more from this on the Savage Nation when I come back. The life and wars of Curtis, General Curtis LeMay, for one reason. It's because he was the most roundly criticized by the radical leftist vermin who criticize every American patriot today and instead extol the lowest of the low like Michael Jackson and Senator Al Frankenstein. I'll be right back. Savage. Warren Kozak, author of LeMay, The Life and Wars of Curtis LeMay, is joining us to talk about an American general who ordered the wartime death of more civilians than anyone in American history. More than Sherman, more than Blood and Guts General Patton, he was an American hero during World War II. His face was on the cover of Time magazine, and he was recognized as being the general who prevented the need for an Allied invasion of the Japanese homeland, saving a million American lives. His name, Curtis LeMay. The Air Force commander who oversaw the fleets of B-17s during the European theater during World War II. And after the inevitable collapse of the Nazi regime, he was transferred to Asia to replace an ineffective commander of America's B-29 superfortresses in their battle with the Japanese. His firebombing of Tokyo caused the death of 100,000 civilians in a single day and left millions homeless. According to an American report, more persons lost their lives by fire in Tokyo in a six-hour period than any equivalent period of time in the history of man. Warren, did Curtis LeMay save lives by his terrible destruction of not only Tokyo, but of dozens upon dozens of other Japanese cities? Why did he change his opinion when he went from Europe to Japan to go from precision bombing of German cities to widespread firebombing of Japanese cities?
Well, Michael, to answer the first question, there is no doubt that lives were saved. It's a strange calculus of war that, or we can even say it's a tremendous irony. As you said, LeMay killed more civilians than any other man in U.S. history. There's no doubt about that. But by doing that in Japan, he forced the emperor and the Japanese to surrender before a land invasion. And there is absolutely no doubt that the U.S. was planning the most massive amphibious invasion that would have taken place first in the first wave in November of 1945, with a second wave in March of 1946. It would have made D-Day look like a cakewalk, and there were estimates of 1 million American casualties. I think that's actually low, and there probably would have been at least 2 million Japanese deaths because the Japanese were preparing for this as well, just as the United States was, so were the Japanese, and the civilian population, we're talking about old men, women, and children, were being taught how to kill. They were basically going to be the suicide bombers of today, only there were going to be many, many more of them.
Well, what was Curtis LeMay's opinion of war in general?
Sure. It was called the LeMay Doctrine, and long before there was a Schwarzkopf Doctrine or a Powell Doctrine, the LeMay Doctrine basically states that if a nation decides to go to war, if it has no other alternative, and there should be diplomatic efforts, of course, but if it doesn't work and a nation has to go to war, and in the case of the U.S. it has to be decided by Congress, then the nation should use every weapon in its arsenal to end the war as quickly as possible. That's key. But the other side to this is that LeMay said if the country is not willing to do that, then it shouldn't go to war in the first place. And imagine if we had used that philosophy after World War II, we would have either won wars or not gotten involved in them in the first place.
After the war, Curtis LeMay was considered a hero and became the head of the Strategic Air Command, which was the United States' system of nuclear weapons, made ready to strike Russia in case of a nuclear attack. What was his philosophy concerning nuclear preparedness in the Cold War?
LeMay had two great chapters in his life. He had the war in Europe and the war in the Pacific. Those two alone would have been enough to make him a hero of all time. He then goes on to have a third act, and the third act is the creation of the Strategic Air Command, SAC, this mighty wave of giant B-52 bombers that circled the Soviet Union 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When LeMay took SAC over in 1948, barely any of the planes could even get off the ground, and it was with LeMay's purpose and drive that he turned it around and made it the deadliest military organization ever created. Now, that kept the Soviets in check throughout the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. And I think one of the reasons was not just because of the nuclear capability, but because they knew LeMay was the man behind SAC, and they knew he wouldn't hesitate for one moment to use any of those weapons if he needed to. If I may just add one other point here, President Kennedy was uncomfortable with LeMay. The two men did not get along. You couldn't imagine two more different personalities. Yet it was Kennedy, with McNamara's approval, who nominated LeMay to the Joint Chiefs. So the question is, if he was uncomfortable with LeMay, why would he want him as the head of the Air Force? Well, I think the reason was, and a lot of people forget this now, in the early 60s, there was a real likelihood that there could be a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union. And Kennedy wanted someone like LeMay by his side if, God forbid, we ever came close to that eventuality.
I'm going to play a portion from the Stanley Kubrick film Dr. Strangelove, where a cigar-chomping general who was a caricature of LeMay had, without authorization, fired nuclear missiles at Russia. Let's listen.
While we're chatting here so enjoyably, a decision is being made by the President and the Joint Chiefs in the war room at the Pentagon. And when they realize there is no possibility of recalling the wing, there will be only one course of action open: total commitment. Do you recall what Clemenceau once said about war? He said war was too important to be left to the generals. When he said that, 50 years ago, he might have been right. But today, war is too important to be left to politicians.
Warren, who created the image of LeMay as a demented, out-of-control Cold War warrior?
LeMay's reputation as the crazy general actually comes from Kubrick's 1964 film, Dr. Strangelove. That is when the entire country had this image of him as this demented warrior. LeMay could not have been more different from that image, and it shows the power of Hollywood, and when someone, a director, gets it wrong, it doesn't matter. That's the image that people have. It also didn't help later when LeMay ran with George Wallace, and ironically, he wasn't a racist. Wallace was, LeMay wasn't. But LeMay had this reputation, and the reputation was furthered by the fact, and it was partially his fault, because he didn't care about his image. Nowadays, we have And even then, we had generals like MacArthur who were very concerned about their image, and Patton. LeMay not only didn't care about his image, he seemed to go out of his way to make people dislike him. So between that and Kubrick's film, we have this image of him today as the demented general. He couldn't have been further from that. He was sober. He was focused. He always respected laws, and he understood that he operated under the civilian authority. The one thing he believed was that you always negotiate from a position of strength, and it was his job to give the civilian authorities, his commander-in-chief, the president, the most powerful force he could put together, and that's all he did throughout his life.
Very briefly, can you talk about Curtis LeMay's quizzical vice presidential run with avowed racist George Wallace? Is this where he got his reputation as a racist, even though he had helped integrate the armed forces after Truman ordered the military to do so?
You know, Michael, I went through all of LeMay's papers, and they are extensive in the Library of Congress. His daughter let me go through all of his personal letters. There is not one comment in any of those papers or letters that is anti-black, anti-Jewish, anti-Catholic, anti-anything. Well, actually, I'll take that back. There were a lot of anti-liberal comments. He didn't like liberals because he thought they were just too pie-in-the-sky, unrealistic. He was a great realist. But he ran with Wallace, and it was a huge mistake. All of his friends said so. His family said so. But he ran with him because he was so angry at Lyndon Johnson for having lied to him about Vietnam. He was afraid that Hubert Humphrey would carry on Johnson's policies. And he thought that if he ran with Wallace, he could take some votes from Humphrey and give them to Nixon. It shows how naive he was politically, because the only person he wound up hurting was actually George Wallace. You will find that George Wallace's highest point in the polls came 10 minutes before Curtis LeMay was announced as his running mate, and it just went downhill from there because he was awful on the stump.
Warren Kozak, author of the book LeMay, thank you for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was my honor, and if I just may say, add one thing. The book is, people can get it on Amazon, and please do.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
And here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. You don't know this, but America, I know you've been watching the Michael Jackson funeral or something, getting ready for it, or I don't know, but Obama, while you slept, agreed to cut one-third of America's nuclear weapons. Have a nice night. According to Bloomberg News, Barack Obama is the most fiscally irresponsible president in history. You wouldn't know that either. It seems that he solved the world's problems. Don't miss the article, British didn't consult the United States on Michael Savage exclusion. Believe me, this is a cover-up. You must investigate this for yourself. Why would they suddenly say that they didn't consult the United States if they did consult the United States? I don't understand this one. Well, I think I do. Also on MichaelSavage.com, Biden says, well, we misread the economy. Yeah, okay. And by the way, you good liberals, one of the released Gitmo prisoners is now leading Taliban forces against the United States troops in Afghanistan. I guess that's what you wanted. I guess Mullah Zakir is your hero, not the U.S. Marines. Don't miss Ellis Washington's article, Dr. Michael Savage, Prometheus in England. That's a great article. And a billionaire backs out of a $25 million sweet deal with a very clever, weaselly way of doing it. You're going to enjoy reading that one. And your friends at Goldman Sachs are in line for record bonuses. That's right. $20 billion in compensation to the wonderful men who gave us the Wall Street collapse. And if you think we're in a collapse, there's a great article on MichaelSavage.com saying New York's moneyed elite celebrate the 4th in yacht style. Very nice mega yachts in downtown Manhattan. Former Defense Secretary Robert McNamara is dead. Good luck to him. I hope that he doesn't cross the River Styx for what he did to the American troops in Vietnam. New York Congressman Peter King called Michael Jackson a pervert and a lowlife. And by the way, in the Honduras situation, Hillary wants the communist restored to power. But the people of the Honduras country do not want him restored to power. Now, can you figure out why Obama and Hillary and Daniel Ortega, communist of Nicaragua, want another communist in Honduras? Answer, because it's a global conspiracy to strangle America. That's what's on michaelsavage.com. Don't miss it. And his weekly report on the shenanigans of the left coast, here is James Herson.
Hi, Michael. Michael, what's with the press corps? Did they forget to drink their Kool-Aid? At a recent press conference, the venerable Helen Thomas and CBS's Chip Reed got in a verbal tangle with administration hack Robert Gibbs over how the administration has been pre-packaging and staging media events Hollywood style. That's right. I said Helen Thomas, perhaps the most liberal member of the press. I mean, Thomas has covered the White House during every presidency since James Polk? No, not really. Actually, since John F. Kennedy. Now she's comparing Obama with Nixon. Gibbs looked flabbergasted as Chip Reed and Helen Thomas peppered him with questions and comments. The two reporters were visibly upset over the White House's Hollywood staging of so-called town hall meetings and press conferences. The condescending Gibbs had no substantive response about the pre-screened questions and plants. First, Reed asked why the questions for the recent town hall on health care were pre-selected. Thomas jumped in, saying, "We've never had that in the White House. I'm amazed that you people call for openness and transparency." Thomas pointed out how they coordinated questions with the Huffington Post at a press conference. She called the White House's treatment of the press really shocking and accused them, get this, Michael, of a pattern of controlling the press. "It's blatant," she said. "They ought to be hanging their heads in shame." And Reed appeared to agree with that, and Thomas later told CNS News that even Nixon didn't try to do that. They're supposed to stay out of our business. They are our public servants. We pay them. Them, meaning government. And folks, they want lots more pay, don't they? While that was going on, the rest of the media were focusing on the Michael Jackson story. In fact, John Stossel's healthcare expose was unceremoniously dumped by ABC, supposedly to make room for more Jackson coverage. Now, part of the reason for all this Jackson coverage is our society's celebrity obsession. A tragic manifestation of this is shown when the man behind the world's biggest online Michael Jackson fan club told the press that Jackson fans have actually committed suicide because of the star's death.
Oh, my God.
This guy, Gary Taylor, president and owner of MJJCommunity.com, said a dozen people worldwide had taken their lives because their lives apparently are empty without Michael Jackson being alive. The Reverend Jesse Jackson even felt the need to record a YouTube video urging Jackson fans not to self-destruct. Quote, "Let's live together as brothers." That to me, actually, Jesse's doing a decent thing, but that to me underscores something's out of balance in our culture and in our society. As you know, Michael, we ran a story here at Newsmax on the British government having denied consultation with the U.S. government on the placing of your name on that vile list the disgraced Home Secretary Jackie Smith put together. But the British government has admitted that British and American officials have since discussed your case. Now, that raises a very important question. It's one the media hasn't asked. They've been too busy. If the Obama administration is talking to the British government about Smith's list, a list that clearly and unjustly defames an American citizen, then what in the heck is your name still doing on a list of terrorists and murderers? It's time for the State Department to stand up and demand publicly that Gordon Brown act now. Michael, you will have your name removed from that list. And when it happens, it'll be a victory for all Americans. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. Harry in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. Curtis LeMay, if I'm not mistaken, also established NORAD, you know, drilling into the Colorado mountains as forward observation during the Cold War, and also established a peripheral warning system that extended over the pole to the North Pole.
Well, you know, what's interesting is Obama could convert those missile silos into birthing clinics for illegal aliens.
Yeah.
You know, think of all of the military money that's going to waste that Obama can now divert to birthing clinics for illegal aliens so that they have as many babies as they want.
Well, Mike, you know, I saw this, the interview that Curtis LeMay gave under the wing of a B-52 during the Vietnam War, and he was asked, what are we doing wrong? What are we not doing? And he said, we should bomb North Vietnam back to the Stone Age and not leave anything higher than 3 feet in the entire country until they unconditionally surrender. We had the firepower to do it. China was weak. The Russians were substantially weaker. We could have brought the North Vietnamese to their knees in a matter of weeks if we had had the will and saved a lot of...
Let's look back. Let's look at this in retrospect. Why were we in Vietnam to begin with is the question. I don't even think we belong there. You look back now, all these men who died, all these men who were injured, all the civilians who were killed, for what? Vietnam today is a modified communist-slash-capitalist nation at relative peace. Why were millions of people killed? For what reason? I mean, you want to think about it. But once you unleash your military, you should unleash them to win, not to lose. So I understand what you're saying, but this is a very difficult question in a sense. I don't believe we should have been in Vietnam.
It was the CETO Treaty, that Southeast Asian Treaty Organization, where attack on one is an attack on all, so we were treaty-bound.
Well, I believe, who got us into Vietnam? Let's not forget, it was a Democrat named John Fitzgerald Kennedy. I think people forget that. They like to think Republicans are warmongers. It was John Fitzgerald Kennedy who got us into Vietnam. Let's never forget that. It was a gigantic tactical and strategic error, in my opinion. Right, because they believed in a domino theory. That is, if Vietnam became communist, all of Asia would fall. Is that right?
All
of Asia has fallen. It's all communist, basically, one way or the other. I mean, where is it not a communist? Where is there no communism in Asia? Let's look at Japan, the one shining example of a great Asian nation that is not a communist nation. It's Japan. So you had a domino theory. You have China. You have Vietnam. You have Myanmar. You have the other countries. Okay, Thailand, you could say, is not a communist dictatorship. So it's a sort of quasi Islamic dictatorship in Thailand, if you want to look at it that way, even though it's a Buddhist nation. You have the military now basically running things behind the scenes. It's not a communist nation. It certainly didn't fall to communism, did it?
No, I think the Vietnam was a replay of the Koreas, like North and South Korea. I think that's the way that JFK saw it, just like Harry Truman. And I think he wanted to be another Harry Truman.
But what I'm saying is, looking back today, how many years later, how many years ago was Vietnam? For God's sakes, you're talking about 1965, 66. You're talking about 40 years ago, right? Almost a half a century ago. You look back now, you take a deep breath, and you say they were wrong. We had no business being there. That does not take away the genius and the heroism of the men who were sent to fight for their country. I'll be right back. Well, you know my feelings now about big pharmacy pushing their pills to answer every problem, particularly in our children. I wrote Healing Children Naturally, which has become, you know, a perennial bestseller available only on michaelsavage.com. Don't just take my word for it. I'm only a PhD. Joining us today is Dr. Peter Breggin to talk about the increasing use of these so-called medications and the increasing profits being made at the expense of people, particularly children.
Michael, in 2008, the so-called antipsychotic drugs became America's best-selling class of medications with $14.6 billion in sales. These drugs include Risperdal, Zyprexa, Seroquel, Abilify, and Geodone. Medications used to control cholesterol were in second place. The use of these newer antipsychotics will continue to grow like a mushroom cloud over America. The FDA has recently approved Risperdal and Abilify for treating children with schizophrenia as young as age 13 and children with bipolar disorder as young as 10 years old. Furthermore, a recent FDA panel has recommended that the agency approve the other antipsychotics, Zyprexa, Seroquel, and Geodone, for children as young as age 10. It's absurd and potentially deadly to give these adult diagnoses like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder to children. It stigmatizes the children for a lifetime while shortening that lifetime with toxic drugs. Children as young as age 1 are being put on these chemical toxins. It's ironic that the panel approved these drugs shortly after the Department of Justice fined Eli Lilly $1.4 billion for criminal activities in part by marketing Zyprexa to children.
What kind of studies are being done before these drugs are unleashed on our children? I am sure that most of our listeners think that there are dozens of studies that last for months or years before these saintly drug companies recommend them.
Michael, here's the total evidence demanded by the FDA panel for approving Geodone for children. One very marginal study that lasted 4 weeks. None of the studies went beyond 6 weeks.
One study from 4 to 6 weeks? That's not even enough time to know any real side effects or dangers to the children taking the drugs.
In fact, Michael, the worst and most deadly effects won't usually be detected for a few months or more, sometimes for years. For example, tardive dyskinesia usually won't begin to show up before 3 months. Tardive dyskinesia is a movement disorder that disfigures and disables children and that afflicts young people taking these drugs at the astronomical rate of 5% per year or 15% or more in 3 years. Now, those figures are for young adults, and we don't have good studies on the rates in children. But I'm already seeing dozens of cases in kids, and the rates are probably at least as high in children as in young adults. Another disease is neuroleptic malignant syndrome. It's a potentially fatal disorder that looks very much like a viral inflammation of the brain, and it occurs in 1 to 2% or more of adults taking these drugs, once again with no good studies in children. These same antipsychotic drugs like Risperdal and Zyprexa also cause little boys and girls to develop breast tissue and even to lactate. And some horrendous cases cannot be corrected even after the drug is stopped and the child is given surgery on his chest. These drugs cause extreme obesity and elevated cholesterol. They cause diabetes and pancreatitis, and I've evaluated fatal cases in young people caused by the antipsychotic drugs. In adults, these drugs also dramatically shorten the lifespan, not only by causing fatal diseases, but also by causing such apathy and indifference that adults stop taking care of themselves. Animal studies show that the drugs are very toxic to cells throughout the body, including the brain, causing shrinkage of brain tissue and distortions in cell growth in the brain. I've documented all this in my recent medical book, Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry.
How have you seen these drugs affect children?
The antipsychotic drugs like Risperdal, Zyprexa, Abilify, Geodone, and Seroquel cause severe impairment of the frontal lobes, the highest mental centers. They are literally chemical lobotomies. So the most obvious effect, similar to surgical lobotomy, is to make people emotionally sluggish and indifferent. They care less about everything, including themselves and other people. They care less about their opinions and their values or their higher ideals. That's how the drugs work, by causing apathy. Many people lose their independence when taking these drugs. Some become zombie-like.
And these drugs have become the most widely used in America, according to sales? This is impossible.
Well, first, this means that the drug companies have done a lot of illegal promoting of these drugs to a much wider general population. They're being prescribed for everything from mild anxiety to mild insomnia. And most appalling to me, in children they are being used to control behavior. That is to chemically lobotomize children who haven't been taught discipline by their parents and teachers or who may be bored in school. It points to something terrible happening in America when so many people are willing to take these lobotomizing agents or to inflict them on children. I think it indicates a growing streak of helplessness and hopelessness in America, an unspoken undercurrent among our citizens that we're better off with less brain power, less intellect, less awareness, and less feeling. It's going to make it much easier in the political arena to turn Americans into a helpless group of dependents who rely on the state rather than on themselves. That brings me to my weekly refrain called the primary principles. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. You can listen to all my Savage Nation reports and download the transcripts on www.bregin.com. That's BREGGIN.com.
Thanks for the report, Dr. Bregin. Very, very chilling. Look, I'm not shocked by any of this. That's why I have pioneered trying to stop the use of Ritalin in children in my book, Healing Children Naturally, which I highly recommend. Okay? It's time you understood that I was right.